What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, I woke up this morning hearing President Trump on Fox and Friends with Lawrence asking this question here.
Mr. President, the whole world was watching yesterday as you got leaders from the European Union, NATO, as well from all over the world. How did you get them to Washington, to the Oval Office so fast?
Well, I think really they have respect for our country again. A year ago, they wouldn't have come. They wouldn't have even thought about it. Now, we've become the hottest country anywhere in the world. Everybody wants to be here. When I made the call, they came. And they said there's really never been anything like it. You know, you'd have one president or one prime minister, but there's never been, you know, such a group. And these really represent the European nations, these people. And they're very good people. And they want to end the war. That horrible war with Ukraine and Russia, it's a horrible war.
So what happens next?
I know yesterday you talked about arranging a meeting to take place in 2 weeks between Putin and Zelensky. Is there an update there, and do you plan to attend?
No, I thought I'd do first let them meet. You know, they haven't been exactly best friends. They haven't gotten along very well. And I called President Putin yesterday, and I do have a good relationship, but it's, you know, only matters if we get things done. Otherwise, I don't care about the relationship. I do have a good relationship with him, but I want to get things done. You know, I've solved seven wars. We ended seven wars. I thought this would be one of the easier ones, and this has turned out to be the toughest one.
And it's not going to probably get any easier from here. We have former United States Senator from Missouri, Jim Talent, with us, foreign policy expert that he is, to weigh in on this. Jim, how are you this afternoon?
Mark, I'm doing fine. Always good to be on with you, my friend.
I want to get your opinion of the security guarantees and explain that issue in particular. Here's what President Trump said about that, because it almost sounds like Ukraine will be a NATO-like member, even though they're not going to be a member of NATO.
They're not going to be a part of NATO, but we've got the European nations, and they'll front-load it, and they'll have some of them, France and Germany, a couple of them, UK. They want to have... you know, boots on the ground. Not in. I don't think it's going to be a problem, to be honest with you. I think Putin is tired of it. I think they're all tired of it. But you never know. We're going to find out about President Putin in the next couple of weeks.
Yes, we will. So, a couple of questions. First of all, you think a Zelensky meeting with Putin in 2 weeks is likely or even possible? That sounds a little ambitious, but President Trump is getting things done right now.
Yeah, he is. I think Putin is going to really wriggle around to try and avoid that. I think he knows that once he sits down and starts talking, the logic of negotiations is going to push him towards President Trump's bottom line and basically push him to take the L. That's what he's trying to avoid, Mark. I mean, this war has been a disaster for Russia on a strategic level. I mean, Sweden and Finland are now in NATO. They've been neutral for 40 years.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The Europeans are increasing their defense expenditures. You're seeing the alliance unite behind the United States. We saw that yesterday. Europe's buying energy from the United States and not from Russia. The Russian army's been exposed as third rate, and Putin's lost 1 million men. And you know what he's got in return for that? He's conquered additional territory in Ukraine, about half the size of the state of New York. So he doesn't want to have to give an accounting for that. He doesn't. Trump's bottom line, I think, is he can keep most of the territory he's got. Ukraine keeps its sovereignty, and then Europe rebuilds Ukraine under American leadership and, frankly, buying American arms. I think that's what Trump wants, a stable peace. And that's a huge defeat for Putin. He's trying to avoid it.
So on the security guarantees, what's the difference between, because Putin doesn't want them to become a NATO member, right? But the security guarantees, the way that they're being described, almost make it seem like they're a de facto NATO member. What am I missing here, and why is Putin going to go for that?
Yeah, I don't think he is going to. The Russians announced today that they were not going to accept European troops in Ukraine. My guess is that in the discussions with Trump, Putin is trying to avoid getting pinned down to anything. He may have brought that up as a possible alternative. It really wasn't on the table before. And Trump says, oh, okay, well, we'll talk about that. I don't think the Russians are going to want that. Personally, Mark, I would prefer a situation where we have an agreement that enables Ukraine, that empowers Ukraine to rebuild itself as a force. In part because I don't think a security guarantee is worth very much unless the United States backs it. And obviously, President Trump doesn't want to do that, and I don't want him to do it. I think that what I'd rather see is, and I think this is what Trump is going to drive towards, is a situation where Ukraine keeps its sovereign right to control its own destiny. The Europeans put in a lot of money. Ukraine rebuilds militarily and economically.
Now, he seems, and I think the president at this point is rather impatient because he should be. This is dragging on. And I guess I think he's referring to Zelensky here. He says, OK, well, maybe we'll have a meeting here in a couple of months.
He said, well, let's meet in another month or two and let's see if we can start, making some way. He said, a month or two? You're going to have another 40,000 people dead in a month or two. You have to do it tonight. And I did, actually. I called President Putin and we're trying to work out a meeting with President Zelensky. We'll see what happens there. And then if that works out, then I'll go to the trilat and close it up.
So you had stage one, I guess, being Anchorage on Friday. They quickly turn around. You get all these European leaders at the White House yesterday. There seems to be a positive amount of energy that comes out of that. And then, Zelensky, he even kind of wore a suit yesterday, sort of a suit. And he, didn't have the moment he died 6 months ago. So then where are we? Because if this doesn't happen, this next part that he's describing with Zelensky and Putin, which it's hard for me to envision a scenario where that happens. And then Trump says he'll come in and close the deal. That's pretty ambitious here for the next few weeks.
Yeah, it is. A couple of things. Trump knows he can get Zelensky to sign off on the kind of deal I just talked about, or if necessary, substituting a security guarantee of some kind. So he knows he's got Zelensky. I think he's got to get Putin. And what we found out, because Putin came to Alaska, he didn't want to do that, is he's afraid of the sanctions that Trump's threatened. Trump gave him a deadline, and he ought to be afraid because we can really hurt him with those sanctions. So Trump has found out what Putin wants and what he and how bad he wants it. So he's going to apply that pressure. He doesn't want to levy the sanctions if he doesn't have to, because it's just classic negotiations. If he can get Putin to do what he wants without having to play a card, he's going to do that. So he's going to push, and we'll see how Putin responds. This is a game between two people who, whatever else they are, and I'm a strong supporter of our president, but whatever else Putin is, he's a good negotiator, and so is Trump. And so they're going back and forth. But I think Putin does not want those additional sanctions. So we'll see how he plays it, how he can avoid negotiating but also avoid those.
Do you have a situation where, when you say putting the hurt on him, what types of sanctions in particular? Because what's interesting here is then I want you to kind of address China's role in all this as well, because they're kind of on the outside here, not exactly looking in, but they play a pretty big role when it comes to the economy or the economic aspects of this, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Chinese are very willing to buy Russian oil at cut rate prices. I mean, they basically view the country as a sort of a gas station, a vassal. They put out a map a few months ago, the Chinese did, of eastern Russia, and they gave the cities Chinese names. And that's how they're dealing with it. Here's what we could do, okay, and Putin knows this. We can impose secondary sanctions on the big Russian banks who we haven't sanctioned at this point. In other words, the secondary sanctions means if you're doing business with somebody who's doing business with those banks, you get cut off from the international financial system. The other thing we can do is sanction the shadow fleet. That oil that Russia sells is carried by tankers and a shadow fleet that operates. That's why they call it a shadow fleet. It operates sort of half in, half out of the actual system. If we sanction those, then he's not going to be able to ship his oil. Now, there's reasons we don't want to do that. We don't want to increase the price of oil until we get our own production up, and we don't want to necessarily cut off that supply. But again, I'm not so sure that you can force Putin to an agreement he doesn't want with sanctions, but I think you can force him to the table, which is what Trump may have to do. I mean, if Putin keeps flailing around like this, the president's going to have to make a decision about whether to apply that leverage and see if it works.
Yeah, because look, I'm a realist in this, and you've followed things like this for a long time. It is very difficult for me to believe. Then again, Jim, I did not think the big, beautiful bill would, you know, cross the finish line the way it did. But it's hard for me to believe that in a month's time, let's say we fast forward to mid-September, end of September, beginning of October, what it is, that all of this is going to kind of come together in the way that President Trump hopes. Now, I hope it does. I think a lot of people hope it does. I think those European leaders that were at the White House yesterday certainly hope it does. But the players, the main players, Zelensky and Putin, that those are the wild cards, and I just don't see those two getting along. What else does Zelensky have to do to save face? Because they're not giving territory back to Zelensky, right? That's not happening. They want more in any kind of final agreement.
No, that's right. Zelensky, and I think in that initial exchange months ago at the White House where Zelensky got angry, you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And
then
he had to immediately make up to the White House. I think that's when the agreement was made that, look, you're not going to get the Crimea back. You're not going to get very much back of what Putin has actually taken, Russia's taken in Donetsk and Luhansk and the eastern provinces. But we will set up a situation where your future security is guaranteed, and we're going to get you a lot of assistance to rebuild the country. And I think I believe that's an honorable peace. I mean, if I was running things, I wouldn't think that was abandoning Ukraine. But they have to preserve their sovereignty. What Putin wants is for them to agree they're not going to rearm. He can control their foreign policy. He'll control their electoral process. And Trump hasn't said a single thing to suggest that he's going to agree to that. But you're right. I mean, getting this done. The other issue with this, Mark, and I've not heard the president talk about this. Okay. But if the United States and the Europeans continue to supply Ukraine, Russia is not going to win this war. And how long is Putin going to continue doing this? He doesn't want to give an accounting, you know, to the Russian people. But eventually, I mean, he's having to rely on the North Koreans now for material and men. So I think if the president's going to have a decision to make, does he apply the sanctions? If that doesn't get Putin to seriously negotiate, then I think we just go on with the thing the way it is until Putin decides he's got to take the L sometime.
I mean, I know that the casualty numbers could be off just a little bit, but let's say you're on the low side of 750,000 people, or maybe it is more than a million. That is a stunning number, and it's just tossed around casually. Like, you know, there's just another big world conflict over on the other side of the globe. And I know there's a lot of cynicism when it comes to President Trump, but I kind of believe him, and I hope he's sincere in the notion that, for the love of God, we got to stop the killing here. In 2025, we're having a war like this where all these people are dying, all these young men in Russia, all these young men and women in Ukraine. So I think that he certainly wants something to get done. I can't wait to see the legacy media's response if he does pull this off. But I think the timetable, and again, I thought this about the big, beautiful bill, is a little ambitious right now, Senator. We'll have to see what happens.
Well, that's classic Trump, isn't it? When he was campaigning, he said he'd resolve it in 24 hours.
One day,
This is all part of the show. You know, I think I came across as really cynical. I absolutely believe, you know, presidents have core beliefs. I could go through all of them and point out things that I think they really believed and were attached to. I think Trump has a genuine horror of war. And I think that's part of the reason he's doing this. But I also believe there are certain American interests he's trying to secure. And if you want to understand what he's doing and why, you have to keep that in mind.
Absolutely. Senator Jim Talent, always great to have you on. I hope all is well.
Okay. It sure is, Mark. Same to you.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
And speaking of nonsense, I highlighted some of this yesterday, and Olivia Rheingold is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. She writes for the Free Press and had a great piece on how the New York Times and other outlets use these pictures of these young kids in Gaza saying that they're starving. But they did a little actual journalism at the Free Press, and Olivia discovered that all 12 of the kids that were used in pictures in the last couple of weeks suffer from other health problems. And they have family members that are just fine. They're not starving. But, of course, the New York Times and others want to use that to their advantage. They've had to apologize, but, of course, the apologies don't ever have the impact that the original stories have had. So Olivia will highlight that here in just a few minutes. I have an audio cut of the day coming up as well. The show started with, this came out yesterday, a consultant report that was written up by the law firm Carmody McDonald on what happened with the emergency management team here in St. Louis during the tornado in May. It's not a pretty picture. It's highly critical of Sarah Russell, who was the director of that group. The mayor yesterday said this investigation makes it clear that there were breakdowns on several levels. I'm committed to putting this report to work so the city of St. Louis can respond at the highest possible levels in any future disaster. Current state representative, he's running for the state Senate, Steve Butz. He's a roundtable veteran, is with us this afternoon. His reaction to the report. Hello, Steve. How are you this afternoon?
Hey, Mark. I am doing really good. I did read at least the executive summary, which is like 17 pages long. Yeah. And I wouldn't say it's worse than I was expecting, but it's every bit as bad as I was hoping it would not be. But it is just a colossal failure. But you know, at the bottom line, I think if our listeners actually read this, it won't take them long, maybe a half hour at the most to study it. There's a lot of acronyms in there, though. Yeah. So you got to get your alphabet right down.
You know what's funny is
OWS and EOP and EOC and SEMA and everything
Steve,
else.
Steve, you'll love this because you've seen me in here. I have my little red Sharpie out, and I have SEMA, City Emergency Management Agency, EOC, Emergency Operations Center, NIMS, National Incidents Management System, ICS, Incident Command System, EOP, Emergency Operation. So I have my little cheat notes for all that. But you're right. I had to reference that quite a bit.
Yep, that part's crazy, but you know, when you strip it all away, and I give the mayor credit for this, right from the beginning, it seemed like pretty quick the real problem, despite the lack of maintenance, which I'd like to talk about a little bit, was on the day that you knew we were going to have severe weather, the department that is their only job is to alert us for emergency management stuff like this, was at this off-site seminar. And even that, Joe Holloman, I know, did some good reporting on this. Only a few blocks away, you think anybody would have just been listening to your show or looking at any news feed and said, you know what, we better get back to the office. There is severe weather coming. And the fact that that didn't happen, even when this report says Sarah Russell and another person talked about it, like, don't you think we should go back? No, we should stay at this seminar we're at. That part is unbelievable. The next one I think that is just so hard to take, because you knew it was going to be recorded, you know, as when Sarah called to the fire department, which was the backup, saying, you got the sirens, and the person answering the phone says, yeah, we got him. And I'm like, how do you not say, this is a true emergency, make sure we sound off the sirens, flip the switch? I mean, the fact that you just say, you got the sirens, it just seems unbelievable if you would just look at your phone and see how it was going off.
Yeah.
And then the systemic one that I think is crazy, and this is the kind of stuff that unfortunately in the city we take one step forward, two steps back, keep shooting ourselves in the foot. But there was a maintenance contract in force up until 2021, and then somehow there wasn't a maintenance contract. And, you know, you can bet it's it's not the best technology. I'm sure it's not the newest stuff. But I was like, of all the things to not keep maintained, you would think this is one of them. And that sure came back to bite us in the butt.
Well, on the Commissioner Russell point, the report says, we were also troubled by Commissioner Russell's refusal during her interview to recognize the multiple failures or to take any personal responsibility for them. But then there's also, you know, to your point on the siren system, there's an indication in this report that Sarah Russell told Mayor Jones that the whole siren system needs to be taken out of service because it wasn't working properly. And I guess they allocated $3.9 million to replace the system in 2024. Now we think we have most of the stuff taken care of, because the other thing that's stunning, Steve, and you know, beyond ironic, is that the day before this thing hit, they did a test and there were, you know, 22 of these sirens that didn't go off that day.
Yeah, you know, and I can kind of accept that, kind of, but to have none of them go off on the day, mm-hmm. the only day that we needed them to really, really, truly go off, you know, in 60 years. I that's the part that's crazy. Yeah, you can see the map, you can see places where there was no coverage, but there's also places where there would have been and was, and that's why I was one of those people. I was downtown when the tornado hit, and I thought, no, I heard the sirens, and they said, no, you didn't. You heard them yesterday, and you're just remembering that you just heard them. We've been testing these sirens. You know, I've lived here my whole life. Basically, it was the first Monday of the month or something. Everybody knows, and you kind of hear them.
Yeah,
in
we get in
the county.
Too,
you hear
right.
them in the city, and don't be concerned. This is only a test. I mean, for decades, but for them not to work when we needed them the most. So to me, and I didn't quite get this from the report, but this whole department, I don't see that it really serves any function. But it should be placed under the fire department. I mean, they train endlessly for situations like this. There's management there 24/7, 365. I'm sure they have a bunker up there on North Jefferson at the fire department headquarters. That, to me, that just makes perfect sense. I mean, they are truly the fire department guys. They are the first line of defense when there is a catastrophe like this. It's really not, I mean, the police help, but really you need the firemen. And I just think that's where this responsibility should go from now on.
Here's an interesting line. The report says that the city's emergency response plan, last updated in 2003, should be updated regularly. 2003!
Yeah, you know, we
that's
make fun
post 9/11
of
there.
Work doing all kinds of studies, but I'm like, how do you not look at that one once every 3 to 5 years? I mean, what else was the SEMA group doing? I just can't imagine, because that's the kind of thing that you should be doing, you know, because there could be an earthquake someday, God forbid. There will be another tornado someday. I mean, it's not like they don't
happen. A variety
of
things. Yeah, absolutely. Correct. A variety of things.
Correct.
So the other thing, one other thing I want to point out, I talked about this earlier, is that they were critical in the report of Sarah Russell because she drove through the tornado affected area to conduct what they call the windshield assessment. I guess that's, you know, something they refer to as usually handled by police officers. And they say, you don't often see this word. I shouldn't even be laughing about it. But they say that she dithered. Dither was the word that they used when she should have been back at the office coming up with a better response to what happened on that day. Now, is she still on the payroll, Steve?
Yeah, I mean,
she was right up.
Yeah, she is. She is until she's, you know, because I think she has civil service protection until she's, you know, formally fired for cause. And I would guess that's coming down the line pretty soon. But my hunch on the windshield thing was, people have that fight or flight instinct. I got a feeling, I mean, I don't want to get in her head too much, but thinking, oh my God, this is unbelievable. I can't go back to the command center knowing, you know, maybe you just
that
had to see
happened.
It for yourself.
Right. Yeah,
correct. That one in the report didn't strike me as that crazy when we had the ice storm and the streets department director did not go outside and drive around in the streets. Everybody thought that was crazy. So the fact that she went out and looked at the damage for a couple hours, I don't see that as, if everything in the report, I thought, you know, that seems a little bit believable to me.
Yeah, I can understand that too. Steve Butts, awesome to have you on as usual. We'll see you soon.
Hey, thanks, Mark.
All right, take care.
Day.
Yep.
Thanks.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Well, Sue is off today. She'll be back tomorrow. We also have Senator Eric Schmidt joining us at 5:04 tomorrow night. He's got a brand new book out, which is called The Last Line of Defense, How to Beat the Left. In court, we have, obviously, as we point toward the end of the week, Reardon Roundtable. Fred is putting that panel together. Yesterday on the show, I spent a little time on this because I think it's important. You know, we have a constant theme of covering media bias on this show. It's not too hard, usually, to root it out, but sometimes it's a little more nuanced and maybe even more deceptive. And Olivia Rheingold is with us from the Free Press tonight. She did a great story. There's some great reporting about something that kind of happened at the New York Times, but it goes well beyond that. And I think people should hear about this. Again, Olivia, welcome to the program. I did spend some time on this yesterday. How are you? Great, great reporting here, as usual.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I heard you spoke about this yesterday, and I really appreciate it. It's a really important topic.
So some of it starts with this New York Times story over this 18-month-old boy in Gaza that was on the front page. And the theme for a lot of these stories is you have all these people that are in Gaza that are starving. The Israelis are responsible. The U.S. is responsible. But the picture speaks a little bit more to the truth than the story does because they were deceptive, they got caught, and you did some more in-depth reporting, and this is not the only time that something like this has happened.
Right. So this is a pervasive problem that's happening across outlets. And how I stumbled upon this story is I was looking at this image that the New York Times later had to issue an editor's note based on. And I wanted to learn more about him. And so I started Googling this kid's name, who obviously is very sick, is suffering in Gaza. But I started to realize that he had been photographed by different photographers across outlets. And so to me, that implies some level of coordination,
yeah,
like
right.
Perhaps this child was selected. We did try and work with some fixers out of Gaza, but we don't have insight. But that's just my theory. And so I did something so simple, it is shocking that no other journalists have thought to do it, which is I took these the names of these children and I looked up the Arabic spelling of their names and I scanned Arabic press for mentions of these children's backstories. And it turns out that all of them are obviously very sick and facing grave situations with their health, but they are not victims of an alleged famine. And that is because they have really complicated pre-existing conditions. So these images that are being put out there to try and convince the American public that Israel is starving Gazans don't show that at all. I mean, that there's obviously hunger happening in Gaza, but these images are whipping people into a frenzy. And anyway, it's a very nuanced story, but that's the thrust of it.
Yeah. So in the first case, that's amazing that's how you did the reporting. You had this kid who obviously does have health issues and he has pre-existing issues that affect his brain and muscle development. So there was an updated version of the story. But of course, that does not get into the print edition. And then it's always very convenient when they update the story with an editor's note. They don't do it sometimes like on the main New York Times account for Twitter. They do it on another account.
Right.
And then not as many people see the issue. And then in this particular situation, there was a claim that her son was born a healthy child, and they removed that particular quote from the story as well, didn't they?
That's right. And I would actually, not to be like a journalism hall monitor or nerd, but that obviously warrants a correction, not an editor's note. It's not context that they're missing. It's actually a correction. So yeah, they're being a little sneaky with it.
Okay, but here's what else is sneaky. This is not the only story. So you start digging deeper here into other images that have gone viral and you discover the same pattern, don't you?
Right. We just picked 12. The first 12 images that we saw where we were like, okay, this is truly viral. It's traveling across outlets. It's traveling on Twitter, on Reddit, Instagram, whatever. We just chose the first 12 of those, looked into these, and in 12 out of 12 instances, these really disturbing images were of children who, yes, are sick, but their appearance can be explained by pre-existing conditions. Like, we're talking head injuries, cystic fibrosis, rickets, things that are not starvation.
Yeah, and I think there was a reference into, you know, we've all seen these heart-tugging ads over the years from, you know, Africa where kids are starving and they want you to make donations. But that's not what this is, and it's misleading in all of these publications. So in the other pictures that you kind of rooted out and found the same pattern, were there any corrections that were ever issued by those outlets?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So there were two corrections issued, and then the rest were completely unapologetic, where NPR has the most egregious, sorry, you probably love this, a little
well,
inter-radio
expected, yes.
warfare.
Yes.
I'm a former public radio producer, came up through NPR. This is appalling that come, you know, when the next pledge drive, NPR reporters are going to be asking for your money. Their story was egregious in just painting this hopeless image of this boy who, that is accurate, but it's implied that it's because of starvation when he has other conditions going on. But so anyway, some were just like, did not, it's very nuanced, and some did not play ball.
So in the NPR situation, there was a headline that said, people are dying of malnutrition in Gaza. How does starvation kill you? And that's where you have this picture that you refer to. You have an emaciated man carrying a child who is also looking like, you know, he's emaciated. That gets out there. It's spread across the globe. In the NPR situation, now in that case, you found out that the guy has cerebral palsy and other, you know, comorbidities, whatever you want to call it. But there was no apology from NPR on that one. Did they take anything back?
Okay, so that was just the NPR example. We didn't count. So the problem with the NPR story that we counted, that is a different example because we considered it's the same child as the Times that they wrote, the New York Times that they wrote this story about. And okay, so the headline for that one is, his name is Mohammed Al-Matawak. He is 18 months old and he is starving in Gaza. So it's actually just on this child, and the New York Times issued a correction. NPR didn't even respond to our request.
Yeah, maybe that doesn't surprise me. But these things get out there, and they get out there on social media, and then obviously, and look, I'm concerned about anything that is a misrepresentation. I don't care what side of politics it's on, but this does seem to be something that's been consistent, whether it's taking the word of Hamas, you know, verbatim on what they may claim when it comes to casualty figures or something that the Israelis did or something along these lines. There is more effort to paint the picture in one direction than the other. And then it seems like when they kind of get caught with their, you know, photos in the cookie jar, if you will, they don't seem to be very bothered by it. The New York Times kind of lets this roll off their editor's note and then moves on, and they probably don't even care about it.
No. Obviously, the issue here is that my story, I mean, it's traveling well, it's doing quite well, but I don't think that as many people will be informed by our reporting as they saw that image from the New York Times. And this is a huge problem where I had, not to get emotional here, but I had one of my best friends who is Jewish broke up with me over this story. And if we are losing people like that, people who think of themselves as progressive and can't even tolerate, like, there are journalists that have complained to me about this story, and I don't understand how
you've lost me.
Why care about the fact?
Yeah, what? So on your friend who's Jewish, that doesn't make, and not to get too personal here, but that makes no sense whatsoever,
yeah.
Does it?
Yeah. Well, it's, I'm sure you're familiar with Jewish Voices for Peace.
Yes.
Like, there are these, and not to be too judgmental here, but I think that these are people who, if they had kids, they likely will not be raised Jewish. I think that a lot of them are the third or fourth generation, honestly, like myself, of immigrants who came to America to escape pogroms. And they are just, I kind of think that a lot of us are the last of the line. And we are Jewish. We are technically Jewish, but we're so disconnected from the faith. And our primary point of reference is, you know, these progressive liberal political ideologies.
But there again, this is where my brain hurts on stuff like this. There's no There's no anger toward the outlets, NPR, The New York Times, or others that are misrepresenting the situation. There's anger toward you for accurately reporting on the misrepresentation and catching them red-handed. That's unbelievable to me. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah. No, I'm the propagandist. I'm the Joseph Goebbels.
Well, I'm sorry that happened with a good friend, because I've had a couple of those things happen related to Trump. And I have a friend of 45 years that I haven't been speaking to since last fall because of this, because he kind of dropped me and decided I was a Nazi. So I can at least relate on that particular. Yeah, I know. And it's sad. It really is. And, you know, in my mind, I think of things one way. Obviously, we're going to try to get together in some sort of peace summit. I think Trump needs to get us together to hash this out at some point. But it makes me sad. And I think about it on a regular basis. And a lot of it is, it just doesn't make sense to me either. And in your case, it sounds like it would make less sense, honestly.
Yeah. And I mean, the hardest part is that it deeply offends me and deeply troubles me. Like, I do have some friends who, they're part of the DSA here, the Democratic Socialists of America in New York City, where I have friends who they're like, yep, I'm a socialist. And I don't understand it, but I try and take a leap of faith that they are coming from a good place, because genuinely, if I take issue with it here in Manhattan, like, I would have
good
no
luck
friends
with that. Right.
Left,
no, I get
you know?
It. Good luck. All right. Well, Godspeed, Olivia. All I know is this was great reporting.
Thank you
so it
much.
Really was. Really good reporting.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I'm a fan of yours and the Free Press. So thanks for coming on here in St. Louis tonight and exposing this, and good luck with the friend situation. That's never easy.
Thank you. Favorite radio station, so much better than NPR.
Take care, Olivia Rheingold. All right, I got a couple here for audio cut of the day, so let's get right to it.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
I want to focus this first one on Scott Bessent, who's the Treasury Secretary, but he probably summed up the last few days with Putin and Zelensky better than anyone else here that I've heard in the last 24 hours.
Joe, let's go all the way back to Friday, because I want to set the record straight on what went on in Alaska. Alaska was a show of force by President Trump. He invited President Putin to land that the Russians used to own. He displayed a huge amount of military hardware and then did a flyover. It was kind of like inviting your uncontrollable neighbor to your house and showing him your gun case. So then President Zelensky, we had a very good meeting with him and his team in the Oval for about an hour and a half. And then we met with the European leaders. It was an incredible group to have in the White House, all led by President Trump. And yes, the culmination of that was a call with President Putin. And my strong belief is that there will be a bilateral meeting between President Putin and President Zelensky. And that's the only way to end this conflict, is to get the two sides talking.
Well spoken by Scott Bessent. Then we'll go in a different direction here. I always like it when people in Hollywood, this does not happen very often, they kind of stick to their guns. So Chris Pratt has been in the news. He's a huge Hollywood star, right? A lot of people couldn't get away with this stuff, but I think he's a big enough star where he can. He's become friends and close with RFK Jr. And he loves what he's doing when it comes to Make America Healthy Again. But because Chris Pratt is siding with RFK Jr., hanging with him, and because he's in the Trump administration, that means that Chris Pratt is an evil Nazi, right? He goes on Bill Maher's podcast, says that's okay.
In politics, you inherit enemies, and when you jump on in on you know the bandwagon with who is the most divisive president ever, it makes sense that you're going to be made to look terrible. And so I don't know what to believe, because it's not like I sit with Bobby and I go, so, hey, let's talk about this. Let's talk about it. It's like we're just playing cards or playing mafia or having fun or having dinner. I'm not going to pick his brain to find out exactly which of those things are true. I just kind of assume that none of them are. And for the most part, I wish him well, man. I hope there's certain things that he oversees that seem to be supported in a bipartisan way, like getting terrible toxic stuff out of our kids' food. I think that's a great thing. And so, do that, that's amazing. Yeah. I'd hate to be so mired in hatred for the president that any success from his administration is something I'd have an allergic reaction to. To be like, oh, well, if they do it, I don't want it to happen. I'll put Clorox in my children's cereal myself. Come on, Adam, be reasonable here. There's certain things that would be a good thing to have. I want them all to be successful.
Yeah, but the problem is 90% of Hollywood feels exactly the opposite. I also love the fact that Chris Pratt was talking so much, even Bill Maher couldn't get a word in there.
Get more at 971talk.com.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.